Jai Ma. So let's bathe and sail in the Ganges of the mother's conversation. And as I said, we are on volume 9. It's a very, very wonderful, I mean, if you want to read one book to understand about, just like 29 to 31 is one book which tells you about the basics of the yoga. This one tells us about what is this new world. And this new world, mother several places gives an example. One is when she sees a movie of Rani Rasmani, which is a film based on Sri Ramakrishna Paraman's life. Now when she watches the movie, suddenly she realizes ki all that is now old world, it's over. So what is she referring to? She's not referring to Sri Ramakrishna Paraman. She's saying, there was a relation we formed with the gods. So us movie mein kya? What was there in that movie? You have typical, you know, ritual worship, prayer, all that is there in the movie. Mm-hmm. Even now sometimes, I had this experience when I had gone to witness one of the prayers in one of the Sri Ramakrishna centers, where I had gone to give a talk. So they sang a bhajan which happened to be one of my favorite bhajans, sung by Swami Vivekananda Bhav Bhanjan. But when I saw the entire aarti and all that, I felt ki, you know, that's where we have missed out something. And she sees and says, this is entire thing is the old world. And she talks about a new relation we have to form with God. And that's the whole new relation which she explains and describes. Come to this where she says that what is the most important thing in this process. So we don't have any rituals, no? We don't have, so that part we can leave aside and we can come to straight. So what do we have to do? So we don't engage in any of the traditional dhoop, aarti, none of this we are engaging in. So what is it that we are expected to do? Mother says, at the basis of this collaboration, there is necessarily the will to change. No longer to be what one is, not changing others, what one is. For things to be no longer what they are. There are several ways of reaching it and all the methods are good when they succeed. One may be deeply disgusted with what exists and wish ardently to come out of all this and attain something else. One may, and this is a more positive way, one may feel within oneself the approach of something positively beautiful and true, and willingly drop all the rest so that nothing may burden the journey to this new beauty and truth. What is indispensable in every case is the ardent will for progress. The willing and joyful renunciation of all that hampers the advance, to throw far away from oneself all that prevents one from going forward, and to set out into the unknown with the ardent faith that this is the truth of tomorrow, inevitable, which must necessarily come. People sleep, they forget. They take life easy, they forget all the time. And this everywhere, when in this very volume you'll see, when mother is asked that, mother, why don't we profit so much by our stay in the ashram? Of course, Sri Aurobindo had answered this question in a slightly different way. He said, because of lack of bhakti and the spirit of service. Spirit of service, mother says, came with the people from Odisha. They brought that spirit of service. Otherwise, everyone wants a cushy job, a chair and table. And so spirit of service, mother says, that when people from Odisha came, they brought that service. Bhakti, Sri Aurobindo says, there is a lack of bhakti in the ashram. He himself said. But what mother says, she says, why we don't profit? Because things have been made very easy for you. And then she says, but she is not wanting to change her ways. She says, this is what I am. Matlab, I am means like the divine mother. She says, everything is being given to you. Now it is up to you whether you want to progress or not. It's purely up to you. And because things are easy, people sleep, they forget. This is where the problem comes. But if we could remember that we are at an exceptional hour, a unique time, that we have this immense good fortune, this invaluable privilege of being present at the birth of a new world. We could easily get rid of everything that impedes and hinders our progress. So the most important thing, it seems, is to remember this fact, even when one doesn't have the tangible experience, to have the certainty of it. We can participate in it. We can become this new world. And truly, when one has such a marvelous opportunity, one should be ready to give up everything for its sake. Now you see, this is so different. Old world is a relation with God where you don't change. You give something and God gives you something. But change of nature? Never. And whose nature? Your own nature. So she describes all that. One second. Yes. So those who want to read about that experience of the mother when she was watching a Bengali film, it's on 10th July 1957. And she puts it like this. One may feel very concretely the strangeness of the old things, their lack of relevance, if I may say so. One must have the feeling, even a material impression, that they are outdated, that they belong to a past which no longer has any purpose. For the old impressions one had of past things which have become historic. That other world is necessarily an absolutely new experience. One would have to go back to the time when there was a transition from the animal to the human creation. And she says that she had this experience during a film show. So, when you begin to transit and transition takes place, then all the human ways of relating with even God, with spirituality, they begin to seem childish. And this is something what she described. And this is something which very materially one can feel. Then, we are in the month of Sri Aurobindo's birth. And the mother reminds us, 14th August 1957, she says, this evening, instead of answering questions, I would like us to meditate on the remembrance of Sri Aurobindo, on the way to keep it alive in us, and on the gratitude we owe him for all that he has done and is still doing in his ever luminous, living and active consciousness, for this great realization which he came not only to announce to the earth but also to realize, and which he continues to realize. Tomorrow is the anniversary of his birth, an eternal birth in the history of the universe. So this is, of course, we know it is very powerful and good reminder for those who feel now Sri Aurobindo is not there. So even the mother will describe about her being there permanently in the supramental world in a supramental body. I will read that. So that's why this is so important. Now comes something very interesting. So she was asked that, you know, why the general level in the ashram seems to have gone down. 1957. Why they asked? Because if you ask some of these old sadhaks, that time there was no crowd. Most people were wearing very, you know, dhoti or sari and typically traditional way, and there was hardly any crowd. They feel that is the reason. Now new people have come. They have brought totally new energy, new approach, and they have a very different consciousness. Actually, it is true. If you really talk to many of these children, they were very different consciousness. And it's difficult for them to understand because they were used to that quietude. And so they asked that why this is happening. Mother gives in response something which is so interesting. And it is particularly heartwarming for all who are staying far away from the physical ashram. So she says, this is 21st August 1957. She says, for a long time, ashram was only a gathering of individuals. And everybody she had cocooned, she would know what is going on inside. Each one representing something, but as an individual and without any collective organization. Now you see, each one progressed or didn't progress according to his own capacity and with a minimum of relations with others. This is what the ashram was then. Not much. There were people who would just go straight, come out. Like typical example is given of Nalinida and Amrita. Their rooms are next to each other. So they would come out. Very good friend, but totally opposite, almost all opposite in their outer temperament. And Nalinida is going, he is not looking left and right. He is like focused. Amrita is going, he is, hi, hello. He was very friendly and, you know, affectionate by nature. Nalinida also, but outwardly like a mountain, totally concentrated. Both were going together. So there was this kind of not much relation with the outside world. But then she says this lasted for a very long time, very long, and it is only quite recently that the need for a collective reality began to appear. Now this is something which ashram people need to understand as well as those who are outside, that there is a reality called the inner ashram. And she is disclosing it in a very different way. Collective reality, which is not necessarily limited to the ashram, but embraces all who have declared themselves. I don't mean materially, but in their consciousness, to be disciples of Sri Aurobindo and have tried to live his teaching. And this I have shared so many times, my experience, and I used to tell people here, long time I have been here since 40s. And they say, why you go out? I said, you don't know that that is also ashram. There is a mother's children. This is very special, no doubt about it. It's the place of central influence. It's such a grace and privilege to be living here. But when you travel, you see her children, disciples engaging in yoga everywhere. Otherwise, see, somebody who is practicing yoga outside suddenly comes here. It's not like he was nobody, not doing anything. Suddenly he has become a Swamiji ka tag lag gaya. It doesn't work like that. So she says, I don't mean materially. So what is the what is required for you to be part of this living reality? She says, you have to declare. In your consciousness, you don't have to put a stamp, nobody is there to approve of it, nobody is there to say, okay, I'll ensure. This is not like on prosperity list, if you are there, you are an ashramite. No, it's not like that. You have to declare to be disciples of Sri Aurobindo and have tried to live his teaching. Among all of them, and more strongly, since the manifestation of the supramental consciousness and force, there has awakened the necessity for a true communal life, which would be based only on purely which would not be based only on purely material circumstances, but would represent a deeper truth and the beginning of what Sri Aurobindo calls a supramental or Gnostic community. So it's no more based on just materially where you are living. It's something, well, that's how the Gnostic consciousness is. And we see 57, this conversation is there in 1960, 19th September, the mother forms the Sri Aurobindo Society. So whatever may be the other purposes, you know, money is required, people are required, but this is one of the things which spontaneously we see, linking people all over the world together. And then she says something even more important, which is so necessary for everyone here to understand, because people still sometimes carry this attitude of ashramite and outside and cut off. Not all, but there are some people. Mother says why she had to do it, this kind of a larger collectivity. It was an imperative necessity if one wanted the ashram life to be viable. See, there is such an interdependence. Everything that does not progress necessarily declines and perishes. And for the ashram to last, it had to make progress in its consciousness and become a living entity. We are rather far away in the spiral from the line of realization, but we shall come back to it on a higher level. So, this is something which I feel is to be remembered. And then we have, she has said that Shobindo's birth is an eternal birth. Someone asked her, why did you say so? And she made a very interesting comment on this. So she answers this, that how we can understand eternal birth on different planes. Physically, it means that the consequences of this birth will last as long as the earth. The consequences of Sri Aurobindo's birth will be felt throughout the entire existence of the earth, and so I called it eternal. Mentally, it is a birth the memory of which will last eternally. Through the ages, Sri Aurobindo's birth will be remembered with all the consequences it has had. Just like we see that Rama avatar, Krishna avatar, Buddha avatar, Christ, all these will be remembered. Everything else may be forgotten. Nobody remembers the Roman king. Nobody now, people are wondering where is, you know, Lanka's Avshesh. But Rama is remembered, Lakshman is remembered. How much ever people may doubt, they may write volumes trying to disprove it, still Rama is remembered. Krishna. And the same thing is going to happen with Sri Aurobindo. Earth cannot afford to forget it. There will be people, there will be movement that will spring up, which will definitely make sure that the earth remembers this birth. Psychically, now you see two phrases of the Gita. One place where Sri Krishna declares that Sambhavami Yuge Yuge, I come in every age. Now mother is revealing it in a different way. And who is this I? He says is the Supreme Lord. So Supreme Lord takes birth again and again to lead humanity forward. Mother says psychically it is a birth which will recur eternally from age to age in the history of the universe. Just imagine. Sambhavami Yuge Yuge, literally. This birth is a manifestation which takes place periodically from age to age in the history of the earth. And finally, from the purely spiritual point of view, it could be said that it is the birth of the eternal on earth. For each time the avatar takes a physical form, it is the birth of the eternal himself on earth. So what more we want her to declare that, you know, he is the avatar? Birth of the eternal on earth. At one place she also said that I always heard that Sri Aurobindo is the last avatar in a physical body. So these are her words, and those who want to refer back to it, 4th September 1957. This is the date when she explains this. Many interesting things here. So one of them is in 1958 she speaks about collaboration of material nature. So what happens here is that she is brought in this supramental substance, supramental consciousness. But material nature is not ready to accept it. It's like you have brought the prasad and she doesn't want to eat it. So what do you do? Because she doesn't want to take it because she says, I'm enjoying this game. Ah, human beings suffer for a while. They die, they are reborn. History of the earth is men were born, they die. They live for a while, they die. Then they forget. They sleep. See, that's how human life is. So nature says, I am enjoying this game. I break a form, make another, somewhere catastrophe. The gods are enjoying. Ah, this is so nice. This tornado is coming. And people living and dying is for them like a, you know, 1 10-minute tsunami. It's like when the fisherman cast a net in the middle of the ocean. 100 fishes in one go it carries. So fishermen are rejoicing. They're not saying, oh, bichare, 100 fishes, so bad. They don't say like that. So, same way, these forces, they are having a ball of a time. Particularly because they know the forms are going. They also know, few days somebody will cry then. Mother doesn't want, Mother and Shri Aurobindo don't want this old game. So they try to tell nature. Nature says, I have a million years before me, what is there? Okay, new species is fine, but like people say, no, are theek hai, when it has to come, it'll come. So then she starts playing with nature. Okay, let me play your game. So while playing, she starts gradually introducing the new substance. So when nature starts playing with this new substance, she starts enjoying it much more. She realizes, I'm missing out the joy of the game. So she gradually accepts. So you see, you can make a whole story of Purana on this. That Ma Aditi ne Prakriti ko bulaya, she called Prakriti and she started playing with Prakriti. And then slowly she gave something to Prakriti and Prakriti ate it and said, oh, this is such a lovely food. I want more of it. She gave more of it. And then what is the consequence? He says, his consequence is that now all the children who are going to come, this is experience of 58. So 58, let's say 60 onwards, all the children who are going to come, in their very physical consciousness, because it's material nature, she has incorporated, like this my, the way I put it across, is she has put a supramental chip in all whom she feels that they are ready, and she's like this, a new type of species have begun to come and invade. It's described in Savitri. Not each and every one, but there are people whom nature is putting this chip in their physical body. And it is going to have an effect because it's right in the very material consciousness. Also in material creation, she is putting this chip. So you'll see hastening of evolution. And there's so many videos where you see many of the animals behaving like becoming humanized. Many interesting things about the other species, flowers and plants. And so because now something else has started operating in material nature. So she describes this experience in 58. And then there is another very fascinating experience. So we have heard about Raja Satyavrat's boat. And in the other side of the globe, we have the Noah's Ark. So what happens in that boat? There is a great flood and certain species are put across. Page 271 is the 19th February 1958. So she, mother, in this vision, it's not a vision, it's an experience where she is involved. She sees herself on the supramental boat. And what is this boat going to do? It is going to carry beings from this world to the other. Exactly the experience of King Satyavrat. When one yuga is going to end and the other is going to start. So she, first I'll just read this line on the last line on page 271. To remember, this line is to be remembered because we often say, where is mother? Where is Aurobindo? Look what mother starts with. What does she see? So she is building a bridge. It is like a bridge being thrown between the two worlds. Here is the experience as I dictated it immediately afterwards. The experience was on 3rd of February. The supramental world exists permanently. And I am there permanently in a supramental body. She is not speaking of supramental world there. But this world which has been created here. Because people have to cross over from here to there. We are not taking a flight, we are taking a boat. Supramental boat. So she is there permanently in a supramental body. I had the proof of this even today when my earth consciousness went there and remained there consciously. So then she speaks of the whole experience that, you know, it is the new world which is being created. So there is a supramental world. There are several experiences. I am not getting into it. Even Sri Aurobindo shows the material, certain experiment is being done. So there is a supramental world which has been created. It's right here. But our material body, material consciousness has to be prepared. Otherwise, we'll just blow off. So people are being seen. Who is ready to start living there while still being in the physical body? And that's an experience which she will talk about later. So she's on a huge boat, which was a representation of the place where this work is going on. This boat, as large as a city, is fully organized. So everything is there, and then she sees people who are on board. She sees some people who are from the ashram. Some were from here, from the ashram. Some came from elsewhere. Now you see again, she's making it very clear that it's not only a special privilege of an elite group. Wherever there is sincerity. So they are both kinds of people. And she says, I know them too. Because she sees them, she sees mainly middle-aged people. But what is important is, it comes on page 275. What I can say is that the point of view, the judgment was based exclusively on the substance of which the people were made. That is, whether they belonged completely to the supramental world, whether they were made of that very special substance. The standpoint taken is neither moral nor psychological. You can't fool the, you know, it's truth consciousness. You can't say, sir, I have filed all my taxes honestly. Of course one should file the taxes. You can't say, I have been, you know, absolutely gone by the book rule. I have followed life. No, that's not important. So what were they seeing? And she laughs. You can't say, I get up every day 3 in the morning and do my nitya karma and after that I sit in meditation for 2 hours. I'll say, we know what you are meditating upon. So that is, none of these is the criteria. In fact, when mother was later asked, mother, you said many of these things which are old have no value later on, not here, that they have, you know, not put here, but there in the agenda. Mother laughed and said, for example, this too much importance given to ascetic spirituality. That you will get up in the morning, you will wash yourself, you will eat only vegetarian food, you will fast. They have absolutely no importance from supramental standpoint. They may have importance for those who believe in it. Again, it's not like converting anyone. What is the second one? Everybody will laugh. Mother laughs. She says things like sanctity of marriage. Ready for a shock. Actually, if you look back, we'll understand many things from our own past if we understand that the criteria the divine uses are very different. And I'm not going into understanding it or explaining it. Of course, people can use everything for justifying all kinds of things, but that's insincerity. But the divine sees what is inside. The standpoint taken is neither moral nor psychological. It is probable that the substance their bodies were made of was the result of an inner law or inner movement, which at that time was not in question. What is that inner movement? Elsewhere she says, faith. The Gita says faith is the substance of which the man is made. Now how will you know faith? Outwardly many things are happening. Faith is so intrinsic. And second she says is will, the sure idea force. People may be doing all the right things according to the checklist, but may have doubt that there is ever such a thing possible. So, that's where the problem comes. Whereas there are those endowed with faith and an ardent will for progress. They are deeply disgusted with the world as it is and they want a new world, not just personal escape. Now, all this is not seen on the surface. Only the Divine Mother knows what's going on inside. And these are the hand-picked. And she says, when I came back simultaneously with the recollection of the experience, I knew that the supramental world is permanent, that my presence there is permanent, and that only a missing link was necessary for the connection to be made in the consciousness and the substance. And it is this link which is now being forged. So again, this supramental world, she is not talking of the supramental world in that typal world. But she's speaking of the world which has been created. This standpoint had nothing mental about it and it gave a strange inner feeling that lots of things we consider good or bad are not really so. I think this is a whole subject to be meditated upon. And then she says in ordinary life everything is artificial except what is going on within. And this is something, it strikes us as something. It hits very hard if you look at it. If we look at our own life, how we are on the surface, particularly in society, with relatives, with this or that, and what's going on deep inside, if somebody was to see it, It will be horrifying or maybe gratifying. Who knows, depending on what's going on inside. At one place, for instance, Nalinda speaks about chastity. He says chastity is of the mind. And if you look at the mental world of human beings, it is filth. Outwardly, very nice. But inside it's filth. How can we deceive the divine? So she says it's the inner, this is tapas. And deep inside what is going on. And that's why she wants to remove all this artificiality, hypocrisy. She says, what is it that the supramental consciousness will throw away? She says it will have everything because transformation means that. But one thing it will remove is hypocrisy. That's what we see happening today in today's children. It has to become a true, sincere and spontaneous life. In ordinary life, everything is artificial. According to the chance of birth or circumstance, so everything is depends on, you know, somebody may have a great, very developed inner consciousness, but outwardly maybe in very miserable conditions. So this entire thing is going to change. So we are going to see a lot of upsets in this world. Well, then another very interesting one is, next to that is, censors. So, this experience was also on February 3rd. And then she gives the, you know, gist of it. The gist is, you see, we all have experienced sometimes sense of guilt. Did I do the right thing? I did the wrong thing. And then with guilt comes depression. With depression comes despair. Then comes a sense of unfitness for those who want to take up yoga. Sometimes even a giving up attitude. So where does it come from? Many people think it's a great thing that you are feeling guilty. But Mother has said guilt and sin have no place in yoga. They belong to the old world. So where does this come from? She described that there are these people called censors who are actually originally were instruments of sincerities. They were meant to make us sincere. But they have fallen and they have become adverse forces. Now this is very important to understand. So what they do is, they can even, so what is the action of these censors? When they are dealing with a scrupulous conscience, they can harass it without mercy, whispering to it at every minute, you should not have done this. You should not have done that. You should have done this thing instead. Said that thing. Now you have spoilt everything. Committed an irreparable mistake. See how everything is inevitably lost now through your fault. These are the thoughts that will come. I made a mistake. Hurry, I wish. So, they want to make us depressed. They may even take possession of some people's consciousness. You chase away the thought and there it comes back 2 minutes later. You chase it away again and it is still there all the time, hammering away at you. You see, people in depression have this kind of guilt. And many times for nothing, no reason. No, I should have done this, I didn't do this. And then people even commit suicide. Very clearly it is hostile forces. At least I have seen in my practice, wherever guilt comes means some serious problem is there. I understand you. Nobody is perfect. You learn from life. You make errors, mistakes. You look inside, change, grow. That's what is required. But when guilt trip is the worst kind of thing. It saps energy. You are not doing anything constructive. You are just rolling in not even mud, but in mire. And you feel you are so great. That is worst. Like some of these Christian Orthodox. Oh, I am a great sinner. So you feel I am, by acknowledging I am a great sinner, I have been redeemed. There's a joke about it, that in a church one person goes and says, oh Lord, I am a great sinner. There are two more priests standing. He says, see, what a fool. He does not know that what I am going to say. I'll confess that I am a greater sinner. The third fellow says, they have no clue that in front of me nobody will stand because the greatest of all is me, and I am going to confess it to the Lord. I am the greatest of sinners. Now, this is, guilt is something which is not in, you will not find it normally in in yoga. So she says, every time I meet these gentlemen, I welcome them, for they compel you to be absolutely sincere. They track down the most subtle hypocrisy and make you at every moment face your most secret vibrations. So they are originally instruments of sincerity. And they are intelligent. Their intelligence infinitely surpasses ours. They know everything. They know how to turn against you the least thought, the least argument, the least action with a truly wonderful subtlety. Nothing escapes them. So one would say, then it's very nice. Now comes the catch. But what gives a hostile tinge to these beings is the fact that they are first and foremost defeatists. They always paint the picture for you in the darkest colors. If need be, they distort your own intentions. You will almost begin to believe, yes, maybe, you know, I was wrong. They'll give a subtle twist. They are truly instruments of sincerity, but they always forget one thing. Deliberately, something that they cast far behind as if it did not exist, the divine grace. They forget prayer, that spontaneous prayer which suddenly springs up from the depths of the being like an intense call and brings down the grace and changes the course of things. So when I had read this long, long back, so I said, oh, that means that each time I criticize somebody, I am basically an instrument of these adverse forces. And each time I condemn somebody, it is worse. Because basically, that's not my job description. But they are the ones who do this precisely. And it's not that they may be wrong. But they bring defeatism in the other person. Oh yes, I am so useless. See, that person was also telling me what a useless person I am. And then that whole guilt thing. And we think we have done mother's work by pointing out a mistake. Yes. So we should be very careful. Mother speaks of this several places. Horoscope and yoga, mother has said very clearly, horoscope is only hieroglyphs. Like horoscopes don't determine you. They are only like they are reading. They are like script of what may take place. So by studying a horoscope, you may know a little bit about the past. But it's not like horoscope is determining. There is a difference. It's like I have written on a diary after seeing somebody's Trikal Drishti. And you write that this is going to happen. So is it the writing or the drishti? Writing, somebody sees the writing and says, see, it is written now. Second thing she says, it can be completely changed. So it cannot predict the future with certainty. And third thing she says, those who take up yoga, definitely the destiny begins to change. So they don't have to think about horoscope. This for those who want to. Of course, those who want to be interested in it, they are always welcome. Everybody can do everything. So, and now about the incidents next door. What is the incidence? It's turmoil in Bangladesh. So instantly, if there is any turmoil, everybody starts, hurry, what has happened? Supramental world. Nobody remembers supramental world till there is a turmoil. Ab kya hoga? Ab kya hoga? You know, this is the question. What will happen now? What will happen now? And then they start connecting. What about the supramental world? So the mother says, page 296, those who want to read, 19th March 1958. All this they have foreseen and done what is necessary to do. It's just that we, you know, they are like that super parents who have planned out our life so well that even if, I'm talking of those who make, who are on the path, even if they blunder, and even if humanity blunders, they have foreseen, worked out everything. And there was, you know, Shubhendu has written all this. And he had foreseen the entire future. And I believe that there was a book. Now it is Record of Yoga. But there were some pages where he had foreseen everything and written. And for a long time it was held by Jugalda. Then he handed over to Nalnida. So someone was telling me that he asked Jugalda, that did you read it? Because it was not supposed to be read by anyone. He says, I just chanced upon little bit of the one page. What was it? He says, আমার পেটে ঘুষা মারবে, বমি করব কিন্তু বলবো না। ইউ বিট মি ব্ল্যাক অ্যান্ড ব্লু, মেক মি ভমিট, আই উইল নট টেল আ ওয়ার্ড। ইট ইজ সো পাওয়ারফুল। শুভেন্দ্র অ্যান্ড দ্য মাদার হ্যাভ মেড এ ফুল প্রুফ প্ল্যান, অল পসিবিলিটিস, বিকজ দ্যাটস হোয়াট সুপার মাইন্ড ইজ অ্যাবাউট। ইট সিজ অল পসিবিলিটিস অ্যাট ওয়ান্স, আনলাইক দ্য ওভার মাইন্ড। দ্যাটস ওয়াই দে ওয়ান্টেড দ্য সুপ্রামেন্টাল কনসিয়াসনেস। ইন্ডিভিজুয়ালি অ্যান্ড কালেক্টিভলি ইট সিজ অল দ্য পসিবিলিটিস। So he says, one thing seems obvious, humanity has reached a certain state of general tension. Tension in effort, in action, even in daily life, with such an excessive hyperactivity, so widespread a trepidation that mankind as a whole seems to have come to a point where it must either break through the resistance and emerge into a new consciousness, or else fall back into an abyss of darkness and inertia. I was watching that movement in Bangladesh and these people on the roads and vandalizing. You may destroy a temple, but you are opening a ditch for yourself. You are writing yourself off from the list of the gods. You are sowing seeds of your own destruction. But, well, the Asura laughs on his way to death, a hideous laughter. This tension is so complete and so widespread that something obviously has to break. It cannot go on in this way. So nothing will remain static. Lot many more changes. See, Europe is burning. England is burning. America is beginning to feel the heat because it is setting fire many places. Bangladesh is burning. China, we don't know what has happened to the premier, and it is beginning to experience a whole shift from its global position. Pakistan is breaking up. I mean, you see anywhere in the world. Middle East. I mean, you see anywhere. India, this is something, I mean, this is really grace that so far, but all around fire has been set. If you see this scenario, all around, because they are not able to touch the central core of evolution. So China, Pakistan, unstable Pakistan, unstable Bangladesh, unstable BNMR, unstable or, you know, economic, Sri Lanka, Maldives, everything around, the Asura knows where is the hub. Nowhere else it happens. And India, within India, the enemies of India, there is no doubt about it. Many Indians are enemies of India. Under whatever pretext, they don't want India to rise. They are on paid roles. All this is well known now. Nothing is hidden. They are taking money from outside to destroy India from within. All this is happening, but somehow economy is booming. People are, I mean, it is sheer grace. No human being, this cannot be understood. So anyways, coming back, she says, we may take it as a sure sign of the infusion into matter of a new principle of force, consciousness, power, which by its very pressure is producing this acute state. So mother will say, yes. Somebody will say, where is the supermind? See, it is shifting everything from its fixed position. Outwardly, we could expect the old methods used by nature when she wants to bring about an upheaval. But there is a new characteristic. What are these the old methods? Catastrophes. Upheavals. He says, but something else is also happening. But there is a new characteristic, which of course is only visible in an elite. But even this elite is fairly widespread. It is not localized at one point. Again, she's saying, it's not just happening in the ashram or in India. There is an elite. Elite in the true sense, not like by birth or anything. We find traces of it in all countries all over the world. The will to find a new, higher, progressive solution. An effort to rise towards a vaster, more comprehensive perfection. And then she speaks of certain ideas which are being released on one side of a wider, perhaps more collective kind are acting on the world, and both things go together. A possibility of a greater and more total destruction. Mark the words, greater and more total destruction. a reckless inventiveness which increases the possibility of a catastrophe. A catastrophe which would be on a far greater scale than it has ever been. And at the same time, the birth, or rather the manifestation of much higher and more comprehensive ideas and acts of will, which, when they are heard, will bring a wider, vaster, more complete, more perfect remedy than before. This struggle, this conflict between the constructive forces of the ascending evolution of a more and more perfect and divine realization and the more and more destructive, powerfully destructive forces, forces that are mad beyond all control. Looks like Mother is describing yesterday's incidents. Or perhaps something which yet worse is in the offing. Beyond all control is more and more obvious, marked, visible, and it is a kind of race on or struggle as to which will reach the goal first. It would seem that all the adverse anti-divine forces, the forces of the vital world, have descended on the earth. This makes the struggle more acute, as well as the more powerful spiritual forces has also descended to bring it a new life. This makes the struggle more acute, more violent, more visible, but it seems also more definitive, and that is why we can hope to reach an early solution. So she speaks about all this. All this has been foreseen. She also says each one of us is a choice. What is the choice? Either we do our yajna bhang and rush into that field of destruction, get into those heated debates, arguments, or we focus only on the completion of the yajna. This is the logic of all yajna. Disturbing sights, disturbing visuals, disturbing things which are happening to disturb us from that ascension. And those who will remain steadfast with faith and aspiration will go through. So finally, she describes all this, that, you know, this long passage, but just to come to the end. We must rise above, spring up into light and harmony, or fall back down into the simplicity of a healthy, unperverted animal life. And then she is in that same flow making a prophecy. That's why I've been saying this 2014 to 2028, maybe 2030. And then again another Kalkhand will come. We'll be given a choice. It doesn't mean we should not be aware of things around, but we should understand them correctly and intensify our aspiration. I shall tell you, acha, but those who cannot be lifted up, those who refuse to progress, will automatically lose the use of the mental consciousness and will fall off, fall back to a subhuman level. We see this also happening. You see some of these people, such an infra-rational, it has no logic. You're losing even the capacity to reason out. And it's falling back toward the animal level. So she says, that part of humanity, of human consciousness, which is capable of uniting with the supermind and liberating itself, will be completely transformed. The great assurance, promise like Krishna gave to Arjuna. So that which is capable, she has given everywhere, and she will give further what is required. Key is, of course, opening to the mother. Wideness, plasticity, endurance, faith, aspiration, will for progress. These are the things required. There is no other criteria. It is advancing towards a future reality which is not yet expressed in its outer form. The part which is closest to nature, to animal simplicity, will be completely transformed. Then, semicolon. Now the second is, the part which is closest to nature, to animal simplicity, will be reabsorbed into nature and thoroughly assimilated. So there are those who are like little animals. You'll see them all around, leading life like cats, dogs, someplace. Mother has made this remark about some places. Oh, they are breeding like cats and dogs. Somebody asked me about these, Mohammedans who are demographic shift. I said, yes, all this has been foreseen. When you breed like cats and dogs, you become like cats and dogs at the end of the day. It's not immediately it'll happen. It'll happen. Just wait and watch. Because to say that we'll also become like them is foolish. It's like almost saying that, you are caught in the net of the Asura. See, so many times Ravan tries that Rama should take to Adharma, because then his purpose is served. Ram says, no, I am not here just to win the battle. I'll win the battle, but on the basis of Dharma. So very clearly we should be careful that we should not get caught into, we also start breeding like cats and dogs. We are lions. One lion is enough. That's how we should become real yogins. Recover the Aryan thought, Aryan life, and then such should be the state that where one stands, hundreds there understand that, look here, let's not go in. Such a force field should be generated by each one of us. So she says very clearly, so one part will be completely transformed, the other will be absorbed into the animal simplicity. But the corrupted part of human consciousness, which allows perversion through its misuse of the mind, will be abolished. It should just be absorbed inside. Misuse of the mind. It uses the intellect to create chaos, confusion, to degenerate, to disintegrate humanity. It will be abolished. This type of humanity is part of an unfruitful attempt which must be eliminated. So we can't say, oh, human being, this is happening, that is happening. All eyes on Rafa. Things will happen. Because once, see, we may try to fool the world, but divine knows what's happening where. And the spirit bloweth where it listeth. It doesn't care how people think and what they think. And it has its ways and means. Divine has its ways and means. Just as there have been other abortive species which have disappeared in the course of universal history. Certain prophets in the past have had this apocalyptic vision, but as usual, things were mixed and they did not have together with their vision of the apocalypse the vision of the supramental world, which will come to raise up the part of humanity which consents and to transform this physical world. See, paritranaya sadhunam, vinashaya cha duskritam. See how beautifully she is explaining. So, to give hope to those who have been born into it, into this perverted part of human consciousness. See, supposing you realize that I have led my life in this way, is there hope? What she is saying transcends all limits of thought. They have taught redemption through faith. Those who have faith in the sacrifice of the divine in matter will be automatically saved. By faith alone, without understanding, without intelligence, they have not seen the supramental world, nor that the great sacrifice of the divine in matter is the sacrifice of involution which must culminate in the total revelation of the divine in matter itself. So, to put it in our terms, those who have faith that Mother and Shurbindo are the avatars who have sacrificed themselves to redeem this world, that alone is sufficient. See, paritranaya sadhunam vinashaya cha duskritam. And then, sarva dharman parityajya mamekam sharanam raja aham tva sarva papebhyo mokshishyami masucha. So, she says a very powerful passage. People who want to read it later, 19th March 1958. Collected Works of the Mother, Volume 9. Jai Ma.